Welcome, everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Audio Podcast. My name is Chris Shore. Joining me, as always, is Jake Barnett. We are here to discuss WWE SmackDown, the SmackDown that aired on Friday the 13th, July the 13th. And Jake and I do this just about each and every week. We break down SmackDown for you from start to finish. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. We love doing this audio for you guys. But here's the great news. It's not the only audio we do each week here on the site. There's a lot of audio, usually over 7 hours of audio each and every week. We've got a WWE Raw review on Monday nights or Tuesday mornings, usually done by Jason Powell. Jake Barnett gets together with Will Pruitt every Wednesday to do the .NET Countdown, where they talk about the best and worst in professional wrestling for the week. Will comes along on Fridays as well and provides a TNA Impact Wrestling audio review. Jason answers Q&A questions from the members, both wrestling and non-wrestling related questions each and every week. I do a short audio slant, which is kind of a catch-all type show or just whatever catches my fancy. We've recently added a quick hits audio where Jason and I will come on and do about 15 or 20 minutes on a single topic or a couple of topics that are breaking news. And then every Thursday, Jason and I get together for our big show. We call it .NET Weekly. It's a news review show. We talk about all the news of the week and often break news that's not made its way to the site yet. Again, 6, 7, 8 hours of audio each and every week. But other than this audio hour, other than the SmackDown review, almost all of that is exclusively for our members. So if you'd like to hear all that audio, plus have all the perks of being a .NET member, access to the ad-free version of the site, access to the .NET member forum and the .NET member blog section, all you got to do is head over to ProWrestling.net, look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up, click there, and we will get you started. $7.50 a month if you want to take the monthly option. If you know you want to be a year-long member, just take the annual option. We'll save you $2 each month, only $5.50 each month. Have access to all that audio and all the other perks. It's a great time. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. We've got the WWE Network that was promised for the fall. We're going to be hearing more on that coming up. Tout, which is WWE's new investment in social media, is going to be making news. Brock Lesnar, of course, coming back. SummerSlam right around the corner. Great time to become a .NET member. So head over to ProWrestling.net now. Click on that link on the right-hand side of the page. Become a .NET member. Get access to all of that. But let's talk about SmackDown this week. I said SummerSlam is right around the corner, and that's true, but Money in the Bank is tomorrow as we record this, Jake. And this was WWE's last chance to do a big sale for Money in the Bank, or as much as they, you know, as much as they're usually going to do for Money in the Bank. And I don't know about you, but when this show was over, I wasn't compelled to do anything but take a nap.
Yeah, it was definitely a mediocre broadcast, and you know, you might even consider it less than mediocre if you were just reviewing it on how much it actually promoted Money in the Bank. I mean, they have their various video packages and promos and whatnot, but none of the action that took place on the show, I mean, really sold that pay-per-view, and I'm not sure, you know, if it was just the creative hangover that came with booking, you know, both shows over the weekend to go for Monday, or what it was, but the show definitely felt like it did not get much creative focus, and as a result, just kind of languished. I mean, there was a couple of you know, decent moments, and the main event was a good match, but other than that, it just did not feel very focused creatively at all.
Yeah, it was. We've talked, you know, hundreds of times before about how you can gauge how good the SmackDown is by when you look down at the clock and see what time it is. You know, like, oh, there's 15 minutes left. Or when they're like, the main event's next, you're like, wow, really? That's a great show. If you look down, you're like, oh, God, there's still an hour left. And that's what we had this week. This show dragged and dragged and dragged. And, like, at one point it was so bad that I thought it was me. I was like, maybe I'm just in a foul mood. But I didn't feel that way about anything else. It was just... I was just off. I mean, it's worth noting too that the stuff wasn't necessarily bad. You know, it wasn't like, you know, you point to something and go, oh my God, that was ridiculous, that was dumb, that was, you know, didn't make any sense. It just was kind of meaningless and pointless. I was going to say it was like a recap show, but not really, because obviously they didn't recap anything, and at least with recap shows, you're trying to tell a story. It just didn't feel like they were trying to do anything with the show. You had Zack Ryder as the GM. He wins the right to be the general manager in last week's live Super SmackDown, and I know you and I both had high hopes for him, but he was a lot like Chris Jericho with the Royal Rumble. We had all this hope and expectation, and then absolutely nothing happened. He booked a couple of matches. He had the crowd join him for the, you know, world's largest fist pump. But he really didn't do anything. I mean, I don't feel any different about Ryder coming out of this show than I did going in. And so his entire run was meaningless and pointless. And so I'll ask the question to you, Jake. If all they're going to do is meaningless and pointless stuff, why even bother to do it? Why put him in as GM if that's all we're going to get?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if, you know, what would have happened if they would have had an extra day to kind of refine the booking on this show, if they would have had some different or better ideas. I know they make a lot of last-minute script changes to both Raw and SmackDown a lot of the time. So, you know, some of their best and worst ideas probably come with those last-minute improvisations. So, I don't know. It definitely didn't feel like a lot of thought was put into what Ryder was doing here, and that's a shame. I mean, we both kind of had high hopes that he would, get involved heavily with this seemingly building feud he has with Damian Sandow, but even that really didn't even happen. So it was just a really disappointing show for him overall. You know, it was an opportunity where we thought, you know, maybe he'd get a chance to really show off his personality, but we really didn't get that at all.
Yeah, it was just a very frustrating show from start to finish. We'll take it apart from start to finish now, and look at all this. Like you said, there are some moments that were okay, and the main event was a good match, but that was Sheamus versus Chris Jericho, and these guys, Jericho's in the WWE title Money in the Bank match, and Sheamus is defending the World Heavyweight Championship. They're not connected in the least. They did have the tag match with four guys from the Money in the Bank, from the SmackDown side for Money in the Bank, that they put together a tag match, and it had a couple of moments, but they really didn't do anything with that to put any heat on the Money in the Bank match, and even Del Rio's attack of Sheamus at the end of the show seemed a little bit, too little too late. We had already seen Del Rio at the start of the show, and he wasn't very impressive there. It's rare that we're just kind of down on the SmackDown like this, and usually when you're down on stuff like that, I think that's what makes this most interesting. Is it's not, I can't point to this and go, I hated it. It's just, it's things happened, and then it would move on to the next thing, and I was still standing there going, why did you do that? That seemed completely random and pointless, and I think that's what makes it most frustrating for me. But we'll go through it and talk about each of these points as we go along. We get a video recapping of how Zack Ryder became the general manager. And then we get our standard opening video, which had been edited to include a lot of Zack Ryder. And then we get the opening pyro, and we look at the signs, and everything is being billed as Zack Down this week. Michael Cole, Josh Matthews, and Booker T checking in on commentary. Zack Ryder makes his entrance and, caught the crowd up and got everybody to join him for the world's largest fist pump. And that was it. It was just kind of like, okay, he's just getting started. And then Alberto Del Rio's music hits. Del Rio comes out, kind of runs Ryder down, calls him ridiculous. Ryder says, there's someone that wants to see you and someone who would ask me about getting together with you, and that's your opponent for this week. And we get Sin Cara's music. He comes to the ring for our first match tonight. Alberto Del Rio defeating Sin Cara at 9 minutes and 34 seconds. There was a commercial pretty quick on this after a Sin Cara dive to the floor. After the break, it's pretty much so Del Rio working on the shoulder. Sin Cara makes his big comeback. But misses a move with Sin Cara goes to the top rope for a senton, misses it, and Del Rio immediately hooks in the arm breaker for the submission victory, and then the match was over. He beat up Sin Cara on Raw, last week I guess it was, and left him for dead, and now we get the moment for Sin Cara to get his revenge, and he does it, which it was good. Del Rio needs the win here. And I really wanted to be high on this match because obviously Mexico and Dos Caras Jr., is that what he wrestled as in Mexico, Del Rio?
Yeah, Dos Caras Jr.
Dos Caras Jr. So, I mean, obviously these two know each other very well. I thought this would be a good match. It wasn't as bad, but they just, both of these guys have been hurt so bad. Sin Cara's mostly from his doing, some attitude and obviously, he had a wellness violation, and then he got injured. a little bit of victim of circumstance there. Dario, I think, mostly a victim of circumstance that, you know, his character is gone stale because they kind of left him high and dry. We've gotten a real advance with him, and he's had some injuries at inopportune times. But it was just two guys that I realized together, they don't have enough heat between them to make for a compelling match. And I think this would ultimately hurt this match in the end. Did you like it more than me?
Yeah, I wasn't down on the match itself. I thought it was pretty confidently wrestled, but I think it was really hurt by the fact that Sin Cara can't even, you know, talk to articulate why, you know, we should be invested in seeing him get his revenge. And you know, the opening promo with Del Rio and Ryder, you know, the crowd was, you know, didn't really respond to Del Rio particularly well, and so he didn't have a whole lot of, you know, crowd animosity going into the match. So, yeah, I think it was just, you know, a decent match as far as physicality and the wrestling itself, but it just had no heat whatsoever on either guy, and I think it just fell flat because of that. And, you know, maybe, you know, in another time and place, if they're able to actually rebuild these characters to the point where they do get instant reactions from the crowd, this could be special, but it isn't right now at all.
Yeah, like you said, it was there was no heat coming off the opening segment. There's little heat for Sin Cara because of everything he's been through. It's a tough moment for both of those guys to go out there and try to make something special happen when, you know, it's to use an old expression, you can't make chicken salad from chicken shit. And that, you know, they didn't have a lot to work with as far as characters go. And so they went out. I mean, yes, it was a competently wrestled match. I didn't see many botches, but I just realized halfway through it, I don't care. That's where I was with a lot of the SmackDowns, as I've said before. If I was not covering the show, I probably would have turned it off by mid-show and just gone, I'll find somebody's report on the internet. I was the schlick who had to be the report on the internet. We get our first big hype for Tout at this point. Tout, of course, is a, it's kind of video Twitter. For those who don't know, you're able to post. It's a social media network that you can post, I think, videos up to 15 seconds. And WWE has invested a lot of money in Tout. And we don't know exactly how much. We do know that Tout announced a $13.4 million round of funding this week. And the name that was at the top of that list, and of course, we see it promoted both ways, was WWE. And we get our first look at what they're doing with Tout here. John Cena's Tout was, his first Tout video was describing, you know, his favorite Raw moment, which was him being drafted to Raw, but then wanted to know everybody else's favorite Raw moment. And then we got several videos from fans, I think two or three videos from fans, giving their favorite Raw moment. This happened a couple other times during the show. I'll start with you first. What do you think about WWE and Tout, and do you see anything coming out of it?
Well, I think it can be interesting if it's leveraged enough. I mean, it's a new way for them to interact with their fans. So, I mean, it could be interesting in the long run. I don't know if it's going to have the same kind of traction just due to so many other social networks being, you know, so, you know, well subscribed to already. I mean, Facebook and Twitter have millions and millions of users, and new social networks, and even the old ones that failed, like MySpace, are you know, struggling to even keep a hold of their user base month to month. So it's an interesting investment. There really isn't a video-centric service out there, so I can see it catching on, but I'm skeptical about the whole thing at this point.
Backstage, Teddy Long was, real quick about Tout, I'll say one thing and then I'll come back to it because we get news later on in the show that I want to wait on. I think it's a good idea, like you said. It's a social network. There's no real video platform, this sort of thing. I think, you know, the Twitter of video is a good way to describe it because you get these little short posts. Most people now, I think, most people who would take advantage of something like Tout have phones that have video capabilities, and so we can do it straight from our phones. So, I mean, I think it's not necessarily a bad idea, and I think there's big things coming for WWE and Tout, which we'll talk about later in the show, at least as far as the way WWE sees it. They see big things coming for them, and I think it can work. But backstage, we get Teddy Long giving Zack Ryder props for, you know, being GM, doing a good job. he walks off. Big Show walks up, complains about Ryder being the GM, says that he should be the GM. In fact, he's going to be, cocks his hand back like he's going to throw the weapon of mass destruction. But someone grabs his shoulders, Show turns around, and there's the Great Khali. They're staring face to face, and Ryder says, Big Show, meet your opponent for the evening, the Great Khali. Show storms off, and Khali does Ryder's woo-woo-woo bit, and they do a fist bump. God. I guess I laughed at Khali doing woo-woo-woo, you know it. But other than that, the problem with this is, and I was just going to skip over this and just say this is what happened, but I have to say, this early in the show, we're just into the second quarter, and what we're promised, this is the tease for the show, Big Show versus Great Khali. How excited were you at this point?
I consider the Great Khali like a giant Hornswoggle type character. I mean, they just kind of mostly use him for comedy. Once in a while, he gets involved in a story. I mean, his matches are extremely painful to watch. I mean, it's just painful to watch the guy move around. So, this was not a hook that really interested me. I don't know. I get why they do it because they have a sort of a proclivity to big man matches, and they think they're spectacles, but maybe we've seen Khali get the tar kicked out of him enough times now that it just loses any thunder that it once had. So I was not terribly enthused by this segment very much at all. Like, it was good for a laugh, but that was about it.
We get video recapping the primetime players' victory over the Uso brothers from 3 weeks ago, and that's good because it was friggin' 3 weeks ago. This is how long they're taking to follow up on tag team stuff in WWE at this point. We even got the follow-up with the brawl of the primetime players and Primo and Epico backstage, which is still one of my favorite moments of the year for WWE because they just walk up on each other, and it looks like Primo just blasted. And just the beginning of that brawl is just a great, great moment. But back in the arena, we get AW introducing his tag team, the primetime players, of course, Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. He's doing it from the headset. The headset was live for his entire match. What I call the new Puerto Rican baby faces, Primo and Epico coming out next with Rosa. Rosa getting the cheers that everybody wanted to give her to begin with, but now they officially can because those guys are the baby faces. Our second match of the night, Primo defeating Darren Young at 4:07. Of course, their respective tag team members and managers on the floor with these guys. Pretty basic match. It kind of went back and forth, and then Primo went for a backstabber, but Young held the ropes. Primo crashes down instead. Young goes to stand him up, but Primo grabs him and hooks him for a small package for the surprise victory. And then we went straight to commercials. So even though they were able to get a win, Primo and Epico were able to get a win, or Primo was able, I guess, by himself to get a win over the other guys. There was no follow-up to it. They didn't seem to make it a big deal. And again, as okay as the match was, and as much as I'm looking forward to the return of tag team importance, or maybe at least a little bit of tag team importance of WWE, this just seemed, just kind of pointless. Okay, you got a win, but it didn't mean anything, at least that I could see.
Yeah, I mean, the number one contendership wasn't really on the line. I mean, it was more or less an exhibition match, and I guess if you're looking at just gamesmanship, I guess you could say, Primo and Epico have a little bit of one-up on the primetime players at this point. I mean, I did like the way AW was, just yammering at ringside during the match. I thought, he was able to get a little bit of heat for Darren Young in the ring, and he does a pretty good job introducing them when they come out, too. I think it adds a little bit to their act that's, that Rosa doesn't add to Primo and Epico with her gyrating. It would be nice if they had a mouthpiece, too. I don't know if Primo and Epico are decent talkers. You don't really hear much from them. But I'm kind of in your boat on the way it all played out. It felt kind of like a throwaway exhibition match with nothing really on the line, just aside from gamesmanship. And that's, I don't know. I mean, if you're looking at a go-home on the pay-per-view and neither of these teams are on it, maybe that's not a very big deal. They can just go right back to it next week. But you'd like to have each of these segments have at least a little bit of impact in the overall direction of this angle, and it just didn't.
We have four matches booked for the pay-per-view, the two ladder matches and the two title matches. That's all that's been booked so far for Money, or yeah, for Money in the Bank. That's all we've got booked. Do you think we're going to see these two teams in a match? Or even a tag title match, possibly?
It's possible. I mean, you would like to see, you know, the number one contendership actually mean something and have them get a pay-per-view match out of it. I mean, if you're going to have the primetime players win that, you know, that tag team turmoil match or whatever they want to call it for that, you know, for that title shot, it seems like they should cash it in on pay-per-view or at least have it advertised that they're cashing it in. But, I don't know exactly how to feel about it at this point. I mean, do you want to have them on pay-per-view in a match that was thrown together at the last moment, or do you want to have them, you know, have it on Raw or something where, you know, they can put a little bit of effort into it? It's hard to say, but I'm assuming we're going to get some kind of tag team match. Maybe they'll have another number one contenders match between these two teams. I'm not sure.
We get a video recapping Edge's retirement as Christian's top Raw moment, and then backstage, Ryder and Sheamus were talking about Sheamus not having an opponent, and Ryder saying, you know, there's nobody for you to face tonight. We'll just have to go on without you. Chris Jericho walks up at that moment and smarts off to Ryder. I can't believe you're the guy in charge. You're just an incompetent, you know, buffoon or whatever. Sheamus, he called Ryder a train wreck, what he called him. Sheamus said, if you want to see a train wreck, how about getting in the ring with me? Ryder says, that's a great idea. Jericho says, no, it's not. Yes, it is. No, it's not. They argue back and forth for a minute until Ryder finally snaps. Yes, it is, and that's your match. Sheamus versus Chris Jericho in the main event. Sheamus got in Jericho's face, and I didn't write down and kind of forgot what he said. But they booked the match, and then we get Kali and Big Show hype for later. You know, Jericho and Ryder were cute together, as I knew they could be, but and they got to this match. So, and it ended up being a pretty good match. So I guess in retrospect, this wasn't a bad moment. But not a whole lot. Unless you got anything special to add, we'll just move on here because it was what it was.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I would add is that we really don't know what Chris Jericho is anymore. He's kind of in this weird transitional phase of the character. I don't know what we're going to see on Sunday from him, but I'm hoping we actually get some kind of character definition out of him before he heads off to do his musical tour. Otherwise, he's just going to kind of be in no man's land when he comes back.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing what he can do if he can find a new babyface character. The Y2J character obviously is not the character he wants to be, but I'm wondering if he can find a new babyface angle to come at us from. Because I like Chris Jericho. I've never been silent about that. We get a moment where they hype the SmackDown Money in the Bank match. They show the graphic of all eight guys that are in the ring or in that match. That led to our third match of the night, Dolph Ziggler and Cody Rhodes defeating Santino Marella and Christian at 5 minutes and 36 seconds. Finish on this comes, you get everybody in the ring, of course. Let's see, Santino got the sock out, was going for the Cobra, but Cody attacked him from behind. Christian drove Cody to the floor and then followed so those two could fight. That allows Ziggler to hit the zigzag on Santino for the win. And then Dolph played it up big to the crowd, promising the Money in the Bank briefcase was over the match. Dolph promising to that was coming home to him and that it was a long time coming. I kind of agree with his prediction. You know, I do think it's Dolph Ziggler's to win at Money in the Bank this Sunday. The match was fine for what it was. It was a 5-minute tag team match. Everybody kind of got to do their spots and whatnot. I hate Santino being in there at all. But, you know, here's where the failure. This is what I was talking about with things being meaningless and pointless. There was no heat put on Money in the Bank at this point. I mean, this match did nothing to make me want to see Money in the Bank more. It didn't even want to see it any less, so it didn't hurt anything. But you would think the purpose of this would be to drive people to want to watch Money in the Bank. And ironically, they've got the top four names. If you ask me to list, you know, confidence-wise, who I think wins, it goes in order from top to bottom. Dolph Ziggler, Cody Rhodes, Santino Marella, tragically, and then Christian. But, you know, because I think that if they go with a babyface, they're probably going to do something dumb like Santino. So, you know, all four of these guys are the top four guys that I would pick to win the match. And yet when it's over, I did not care one iota more than I did before it started.
Yeah, I mean, the reason that I kind of agreed and I felt the same way is that having Ziggler pin Santino, who, you know, was a parody character on Monday and spends most of his time being a clown, doesn't really do anything for me. And I wish he would have, why not have him beat Christian? And Christian wouldn't lose anything by taking a pin, and you want Ziggler to get a boost if he is, in fact, the guy that you want to send up the ladder to pull down the briefcase on Sunday. So, I don't know. It felt pointless because I don't feel like I watched, anything happen in the ring. It's just like, oh, Ziggler beat Santino, moving along now. I just kind of felt like you said, it was just a waste of 5 minutes.
Yeah, and Ziggler celebrated like he had just won a title, and you're like, you friggin' pinned a guy with a sock on his hand. You know, SmackDown has been much better than of late, and I think maybe the reason why we're so hard on today, or at least me, and I love your thoughts on this, is that SmackDown's been better, and this show was markedly not better, and it's tough. You know, we had gotten to a certain level where we saw a lot of development for characters and whatnot, and I do agree, the show felt tired for most of it, and I think a lot of that was the fact that it was taped immediately after Raw went off the air Monday night, so, it was getting late for that crowd in Denver, and I have some sympathy there for that, but I realize they had to make that change because of the fires in Colorado, and you can't plan for that, but this is your go-home for a pay-per-view. I just wonder if the Raw crowd, or not, when I say crowd, I don't mean necessarily the WWE universe, but the Raw group, not even the wrestlers, but the team that goes with Raw, I wonder if them being around, because we see this, when SmackDown gets too much attention, it becomes bad. If it's left alone and kind of forgotten, that's when it actually gets pretty good, and I wonder how much of this has to do with the fact that they were under a lot of scrutiny because it was the same Raw group. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just really feel bad for the people that went to see WWE in Denver on Monday. Raw was a shit sandwich too. It wasn't very good, and then you had to sit through 2 hours of SmackDown, which was mediocre at best, depending on what your tastes are in professional wrestling. So I don't know. It just didn't. I think the people in Denver got the short stick in terms of WWE live events. It just did not. It wasn't a good week for WWE, and whether that's because they've lost interest in the storylines they're working with, and they're getting ready to hit the reset button with the Styles of the Raw heading into SummerSlam, or whatever the case may be. It's hard to predict what the internal rumblings are in WWE, but it definitely felt like a very tired week of broadcast, very tired 4 hours. This wasn't a very good week for WWE, especially once, a week when you're heading into a pay-per-view. It almost felt like they almost thought they had it booked last week, and this was just, kind of coasting into this Sunday. And it's a shame because I think there were some interesting things they could have done.
Yeah, getting lazy on a go-home week is not the week to be getting lazy. That is not how you want to do it. But nevertheless, Luke, trudge on. We get a graphic that hypes Charlie Sheen Charlie Sheen just shut down his Twitter, and yet we still get a graphic and a promise that Charlie Sheen will be at Raw, will be the Raw 1000, the 1000th Raw, excuse me, social media ambassador. He's getting a tout account, isn't he?
You would have to think so. If Twitter accounts get suspended and reanimated all the time by celebrities who are trying to, stir up some media controversy. So I would expect he'll magically get a tout account for that Monday's Raw, and then his Twitter will mysteriously reappear within the next week or two.
We get a video recap of AJ, CM Punk, and Daniel Bryan from Raw, everything that played out with them, the segment where all the marriage proposal happens at the start of the show, and then, of course, the main event, how it all played out. The first part was kind of recap. And then the second part where they showed what happened at the end of the show, that was just linear and played straight through instead of bouncing around. It was a good video. They cleaned up a lot of the problems that they had, especially in that opening segment with AJ, having weird pauses in between her lines and whatnot. So they cleaned up all the problems they had there. I think they gave us too much AJ on Monday. They gave us a lot last week, and I said you can do that, every once in a while, but you can't do it a lot. They did a lot and kind of burned it. So I think they took a little bit of shine off of this, but it's still the best story on wrestling television right now. But I want to get your thoughts on this. I said more in .NET Weekly for our members if you guys want to hear that. But just quickly your thoughts on the Punk AJ Bryan story and how it played out this week on Raw, but also more importantly than that, for as far as for SmackDown goes, this came at the top of the second hour. I mean, the second hour broke in the middle, dead in the middle of this video package. What does that say when, you know, you got the main event and then the second best ratings time for any of these shows is the top of that second hour, and they spent the top of the second hour with a video package? Do you think that's a smart move?
You know, I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, they obviously think AJ and Punk and Brian is interesting enough to carry a segment even through a video package of, you know, a previously occurred event. So maybe they just didn't have anything. I mean, the creative was so bizarre this week in terms of, you know, just how lackadaisical both shows felt that, you know, I wouldn't put it, you know, out of the realm of possibility that they just didn't have any ideas with what to do with the top of the second hour other than to showcase the one storyline that people have been, you know, somewhat raving about and, you know, all over the internet and all over Twitter and whatnot. So, you know, it's hard to say what that means for, you know, the direction of the pay-per-view on Sunday, but I wasn't down on what happened on Monday. I thought you were correct to point out that the segment dragged when AJ was pausing way too frequently. But other than that, I thought, you know, what they did on Monday forwarded the storyline pretty well. But whether it can actually carry the second hour of a show with rehashed material, I doubt it. But I guess we'll have to wait for the ratings to find out.
To me, it's not even so much about whether it's a good idea or a bad idea. It screams how much faith they have in the SmackDown roster. That this is what they're going to leave the second hour with is replay stuff. Because I don't care what anybody says. Jason is up with me on this and all this. I just think he's wrong. I don't think there's anybody watching SmackDown that didn't watch Raw. I just absolutely refuse to believe that. I mean, can you find a person here or a person there? Yeah. But I'm talking about, you know, real numbers of people. I mean, I just don't believe that there is a segment of the population, a big segment of the viewing population that watches SmackDown and does not watch Raw. And so everybody who's watching has seen that clip. And, you know, it's like I saw it live or I watched it on DVR. I already saw what happened. You know, why spend – that's time that you could spend building someone on SmackDown – I go back to Damian Sandow, who we're going to talk about here in a minute, who did not get a chance to talk. You know, I would have rather given him time to cut a short promo than to rehash this entire event again. It should have been a short video that they showed somewhere else and given someone a chance on SmackDown to take that big rating time and do it. I understand the argument was going to be, well, you want us to sell the pay-per-view and that's the best thing that we've got on the pay-per-view. I don't disagree with that sentiment, but you know, you could still show that video in that top, you know, near the top of that second hour and get the same effect and yet also give someone a chance to shine. That was more frustrating to me than anything else. It's not just we've already seen this. It's we've already seen this, and God dang it, you're giving up prime time here, some of the best time on the show, to rehash something that I guarantee you everybody who's watching has already seen. That just frustrates me. Because I think there's, especially with SmackDown being the young guys and the new guys is kind of how it's turning out to be primarily, with a couple of big stars at the top. You know, you need to give those guys time to do it to get over, and it just you got to quit wasting it rehashing things that have already been seen. I'm off my soapbox here. We get Big Show's ring entrance, and I thought, okay, Big Show entrance, and then we'll go to commercial. Khali comes out, they ring the bell, and immediately I'm going, well, maybe this won't be so bad after all. Yep. 34 seconds. Big Show knocks out Great Khali in 34 seconds. Khali gets two chops. Big Show punches him and knocks him out with the WMD. That's it. Thanks for coming, folks. I guess if you're going to have this match, thank you very much, WWE, for making it as short and as painless as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you on that front. A couple of things really did bother me about this match. One of them being, if the Big Show can knock out the Great Khali with one punch 34 seconds into a match, why doesn't that happen all the time? And another thing was, in the announce booth, Cole said he hit the knockout punch out of nowhere, when in fact, Khali's back was turned while he took the 10 seconds it takes for him to wind up for that punch. So, I don't know, the whole thing was just kind of absurd to me. But it was short and sweet, so you got to give him that.
Yeah, out of nowhere. The guy's 7'2", 400 pounds. He's not throwing lightning punches in the ring. He's not Mike Tyson, who, yes, hits you hard, but you never, you know, the uppercut literally came out of nowhere. You didn't realize it was coming until you were hit. That, Big Show winds back for that thing. So, yeah, that's a good point. As we go into commercial, the very first commercial, and this is where I think we're going to see where Tout came up to be. I kind of guessed it this way. Keller had guessed on this with Jason Powell on the live cast, for PW Torch. But our first commercial hypes that Twitter and Tout will be used by the WWE Universe to help, and this is WWE's words here, not mine, to help create Raw starting in 2 weeks. It's that you will not just no longer be a viewer, you will be helping to create Raw. Wade Keller said on the live cast, and I said next day, even though I hadn't heard it, that I thought that Tout would become, that the WWE Universe would become the new Raw GM, and that they would be using Tout. People would send in videos. Now, I got an email from someone this morning when I espoused that in my report as well, saying, well, yeah, but don't you think they're going to do what they want to do, and then they'll find a video to match up? Yeah, absolutely. I think if they want to do, John Cena versus Kane, they'll kind of hint at that and say, what should we do here? And then with every intention of doing John Cena versus Kane, and then they'll just wait for the right Tout video, the one they like, to come in that says John Cena versus Kane, and go, ha, this person booked John Cena versus Kane. I mean, it's almost like the Taboo Tuesday and Cyber Sunday stuff that they used to do, where you'd call in and vote, but, it's like, who do you want John Cena to face? Hornswoggle, Damian Sandow, or CM Punk? Who are they going to pick out of those choices? So, I think it's going to be certainly pushed in a certain direction. They're going to try to do, what magicians do with tails and pushing people to say certain things. But, I still think that this is what they're going with it. And this video really kind of implied that by saying that Twitter and Tout would be used by the fans to create WWE Raw.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be just like the WWE.com polls, where, it's a mixture of rigged voting and power of suggestion and, all that kind of mentalism stuff that that magicians and whatnot use in their act to get the results they want. I mean, I can see them trying to use this as we have the most interactive television show, that's the most responsive to what its fans want and all this other stuff. But I don't anticipate it's going to majorly change the way that they develop the show. If anything, they'll just use it to, as an example of how, they can be, more connected to their fans than any other type of medium. So I'm kind of with you. I think you're right. I think this is going to be, Stephanie McMahon was talking about we're all becoming interactive, and I'm assuming that that's what she meant. And we'll have to see how it plays out, but I assume it's going to be just like the dot-com polls, where they just put the numbers up that say whatever they want to say in the first place.
You think it can work?
If they keep it to a minimum. I mean, if it's going to be something like they did when they first initially started promoting Twitter, and they had Cole beating us over the head with it, and they had graphics on the screen, and it just became too distracting, and it took away from the show, I think it could be a problem, and they'll have to scale it back right away. But if they find a decent balance where they only use it for a few segments, the major storylines or whatever, to try to add a little piece of unpredictability, I think it could work. But it's going to take some finesse, and I'm not sure they have that at this point.
Yes, I think it's got a potential to be a pretty good hook for some people. It's something that they can do, that they can not literally turn it over to the fans, but yet make, a good chunk of the fans believe that, they're responsible for what's on Raw every week. And I don't think it offends those of us who know it's not really the fans booking Raw. I think we just kind of shrug our shoulders and walk away. And I think it could be a very smart business deal ultimately for them. It's going to be, we got 2 weeks to find out for sure. The 1,000th Raw will be a big deal. Curt Hawkins and Tyler Rex make their entrance. We find out during, while they're showing a video of Ryback killing Curt Hawkins from the week before, we find out that they flipped a coin to see who was going to face Ryback first. Hawkins was the one who lost the coin flip, and that's why he went first. Rex took a mic and promised to do something that nobody else has done, which was defeat Ryback. Ryback comes out for our fifth match of the night, and it was him squashing Tyler Rex in a minute, 55 seconds. To his credit, Tyler Rex got in like three moves of offense, which is, I think, three more than anybody else has ever gotten. Maybe Hawkins got in one or two last time, but he hit a hangman on the top rope at one point, kind of staggered right back. He ducked a clothesline, I think it was, and hit a kick or something, but, I mean, it was a squash, and I'm kind of bored with Ryback at this point. I mean, I know I said he needed to move on to the real names, and they've done that. That's at least an improvement. But I don't know. I don't mind him just mowing through people, but, you know, at this point it really does feel like Goldberg. He needs somebody talking for him or to talk, do a little bit of talking himself. I'm not looking for big, long promos, but we need some direction. And, you know, at this point he just really feels like a Goldberg plus.
Yeah, that is what it feels like to me. I think, you know, we've talked about this before. He needs a mouthpiece. He needs a storyline or a direction or at least a goal. You know, if he had a mouthpiece that was talking about him making his way up the card towards the world title and he just, you know, starts interfering in matches and destroying people and whatnot, I think that could be fun. But what they're doing now is just quickly losing steam, and I think that's evident by the crowd reaction. Nobody really reacted to anything but the high-impact spots in this match. They really didn't even react to Centric anymore.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to get the oohs and the ahs whenever he throws people 100 feet in the air or when he slams somebody down really hard. And, you know, the big boot and drive it all the way down to the throat. Those sorts of things are going to get fans to react because, you know, you just don't see that stuff in most matches. And so it is a moment where, you're especially live, it's easy to get caught up in that sort of thing. But that's it. That's the only reaction he's getting. And he just, you know, just like I said, he needs some direction. He's got to, I don't even care if they're stating a goal. That he needs something because he is 100% the Goldberg clone at this point. Goldberg didn't say anything. Just came out and beat people, and those chants are getting more and more prevalent. Denver didn't, but again, I think Denver was tired for having gone through Raw and most of this show already at this point. So, but we spent more time talking about Ryback than they gave us a match. We get Hugh Jackman's time on Raw was one of the big Raw moments as they talk about the 1,000th Raw coming up. We get a graphic hyping Rock's appearance at the 1,000th Raw. And then a few more talent videos of the certain fans' favorite Raw moments. After commercial, Justin Gabriel's in the ring. Damian Sandow makes his ring entrance. Absolutely no promo from him tonight. And then our sixth match, Damian Sandow defeating Justin Gabriel in a minute and 41 seconds. We got the side rush and leg sweep and elbow drop from Sandow early, then a little bit of offense from Gabriel, and then Sandow snaps and hits the rough knees into his neckbreaker finisher for the win. Gabriel fell wrong, and so he was not facing the right way, and so Sandow had to pose to nothing instead of the hard cam like he's been doing. I don't know if that's Gabriel's fault or Sandow's fault or what, but he was doing his pose and not doing it towards the right camera, which was kind of upsetting. I love this guy. I've made no bones about it, but this is not what he needed. He needed a chance to come out, and I hope we get this at Money in the Bank, though I seriously doubt that we will. I wanted him to come out and give his intellectual arguments for why the ladder match is a dumb idea, but he had to compete in it anyway. I thought that would have been a great promo. And even if not that, something. That's what he needs. He and Ryback are almost polar opposites to some degree. Ryback is going to get over with what he does in the ring. He needs a mouthpiece to give him some direction to kind of to round things out, but he's going to get over by what he does in the ring. Sandow is good in the ring, and he needs that, you know, he needs to be good, but to get over, he's got to talk on the microphone. They gave him no time. Why?
Good question. I really have no idea. Kind of a missed opportunity. I don't know if it's just because Gabriel, isn't somebody that he would have a lot to say about. I mean, it's just hard to say. I mean, it just seems like a missed opportunity. I like Sandow a lot, and I hope he has a breakout performance at the pay-per-view. But, I don't know. Gabriel just doesn't have a character, and it's hard to talk to, about someone that doesn't really have a character. You could have talked about the Money in the Bank match like you described, but it just definitely didn't feel like they didn't have the time or didn't want to put the effort into writing him a promo, and it's a huge mistake in my opinion.
wasted opportunity for sure. We get a video, again, more video. This one, of course, just, you know, I'm glad they showed it here and not before the tag match, because as you pointed out, it would have, you know, meant even less than for Ziggler to win. But we get the video reminding everyone that Santino spent Monday dressed as Sherlock Holmes and digging out Hornswoggle from under the ring to reveal him as the anonymous Raw GM. They're still playing it up as Cole being upset about it. I do not think I could care less about that. Like, I was one of the guys screaming for a payoff, and then they gave us the payoff, and I'm like, you know, I hate to kind of go back and to be that guy here, but yeah, maybe in retrospect, you should have just left it hanging and let it just be one of those many things that we talk about in WWE lore that never had a payoff, because I think Hornswoggle ends up being worse than nothing at this point.
Yeah, and there were times, you know, I can remember segments specifically where he was in the ring when the stupid thing went off. So it makes little sense looking back on it. There was no expectation that he would be, you know, the general manager. But I guess when you're, you know, when you want to pay something off, and you only have the people in the building that you can go with, you got to figure something out. But it was definitely a disappointment, and it probably would have been more interesting had they left it alone. But it is what it is, and I guess we just have to live with it.
Then we get that weird moment, or that weird SmackDown moment that we see so many times. We get, they hype the Sheamus versus Jericho match for next. They go to commercial. So back from commercial, they do the ring entrances, for both guys. And they go back to commercial. And then we finally come back for our seventh and final match of the night, Sheamus defeating Chris Jericho at 14 minutes and 47 seconds. I was crapping all over this match into the commercial break. It just being slow and plodding. And when they first came back from the break, I still wasn't impressed. Then about 2 or 3 minutes after that, I was hooked in. The last 6, 7 minutes of this match were really good, and they managed to pull me out of the deep funk that the rest of the show would put me in. I was up for this match by the end. We saw a lot of back and forth with guys hitting different moves, some bigger moves on each other. Jericho hit a couple of code breakers, including one out of the air. Sheamus hit White Noise, lots of false finishes, lots of near falls throughout this match. Again, when Jericho hit that code breaker out of the air, Sheamus had pulled himself to the top rope and jumped off for that shoulder tackle that he does. Jericho hits the code breaker out of the air, the Denver crowd really hot for that near fall. Jericho screams for Sheamus to stand up and charges at him. When he does, Sheamus hits the bro kick for the pinfall victory. Again, 14 minutes, 47 seconds. I know you liked the match as well. You mentioned that at the start of the show, but did you like it from the beginning, or were you kind of like me where it dragged the beginning? And again, I think, to be fair, suffered from the rest of the show. The show had me going, I don't give a damn, when the bell rang for this, and so they were in a hole to begin with, but they dragged me out of the hole, and it actually got me up a little bit more, because by the end, I was really digging this match.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was great, too. I wasn't so down on the beginning as you were. I don't mind when matches kind of build slowly, but I'm also a fan of Japanese wrestling, so that could just be a difference in our taste. But that didn't bother me as much, and I thought it built to a nice conclusion. It almost felt like a trial balloon there at the end, because it did seem like they were trying to test what kind of face reaction Jericho could get, you know, playing up his more babyface style offense that he used to do with Lion Salt and the Walls of Jericho and the Code Breaker and stuff. You know, he did seem to get a decent crowd reaction for those spots. So I'm thinking they're probably going to end up trying to push him further as a babyface, and I'm okay with that. And the near falls and stuff at the end of the match were very well done. And I even liked the conclusion. The way Sheamus won seemed like it fit the rest of the match, too. So overall, it was a great, great showing for both of them.
There's one moment in this match that kind of aggravated me. I just want to pull it out real quick and get your thought on it. Jericho hooks the Lion, the Walls of Jericho, and sorry, I was falling back into WCW time there. I caught the Lion Tamer. He hooks the Walls of Jericho, and Sheamus makes a rope pretty quick, and then they go right back to it again, and Jericho sits down on it, and they sit down in the middle of the ring with it for a minute, and Sheamus sells it, and we get right to the point of about to tap out, and his back is hurting him so bad that he's going to just tap out right there. We think it's going to happen, and yet after all that time in the hold, he just turns over and shoves Jericho away. And, you know, it's not, I mean, we see that a lot of times, but it's one of the things in wrestling that kind of drives me crazy. It's, you know, you get to that point where you think the end's going to come, or where you basically have a faulty and a submission hold, and yet the guy doesn't make the rope, he doesn't find a sneaky way out, he just powers out.
Yeah, and realistically, I mean, that almost never happens. But, yeah, that was the one point in the match, I guess you could point to and say that was kind of irked you a bit. I mean, and I think he hit, you know, despite all that back pain, he hit White Noise, like, immediately afterwards, too. So it was just one of those, you know, pro wrestling moments that you either have to put out of your mind or it'll bother you until you're in the end of your days. But, yeah, I mean, aside from that spot, I thought it was a very good match overall.
Yeah, like I said, I don't want to beat him up too much over it. It was just when it happened, I was like, God, I hate that. And it, like, it's not him. It's you see it. It's not even WWE. You see it everywhere. It's just one of those moments where you go, come on, guys. I don't think that does what you mean for it to do. I don't think it works that way. But Sheamus celebrates up the ramp after winning the match. Del Rio's music hits, and Sheamus turns around facing the ramp, or facing the entranceway, looking for him. The car comes out, so Sheamus walks to that end of the stage and stares at the car, but Del Rio was not the one in the car. He runs out from the back, attacks Sheamus. Ricardo Rodriguez driving the car. He drives Sheamus, or knocks Sheamus down to the ground, and then grabs the arm and hooks the cross arm breaker off the side of the stage, which I thought Sheamus did an okay job. I mean, if you're looking at it, you're going, the stage is like a foot tall. I mean, there's no real extra pressure from doing it this way. I thought Sheamus did a good job of wiggling around right to make it seem like it, you know, it was hurting more than because it was off the side of the stage. It just something that kind of stood out to me. But Del Rio holds it for a while, some refs run out, he finally breaks it, stands tall over Sheamus, pretty much so signifying that there's no way on God's green earth he's going to win that title on Sunday, because booking 101 says you go the other way. So I like the attempt with Del Rio, of course, but I think here a less is more thing would have been better, where, you know, he made a statement at the beginning of the match, and doing it here just screams, or excuse me, beginning of the show when he beat Sin Cara, and doing it here just screams he's going to lose on Sunday. I think it would have been better with just Sheamus standing tall, and, you know, Del Rio looked good early, Sheamus looked good late, we've got a real face-off on Sunday. I think this kind of gives it away, don't you?
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I do think they kind of telegraphed what they're planning to do on Sunday, but I guess maybe it didn't bother me quite as much, because I always kind of felt that was the way they were going anyway. The one thing that did bother me about the segment is that it felt really similar to the attack that Del Rio put on Sheamus last month on Raw. I mean, they did the same spot with the brawling on the stage and the cross arm breaker on the ramp and Ricardo, you know, with the vehicle and all that stuff. So it just kind of felt like a replay for me, and that kind of bothered me. But I had no expectation of Del Rio actually going over on Sunday, so the booking 101 stuff, I guess, didn't really bother me that much.
You know, I didn't have any expectation for him going over either, but don't tell me. You know, it's like, I don't think he's going to win, but, you know, I'm willing to give it a 1% chance, and that's enough to keep me engaged. Don't put up a sign that says, this guy's got no chance in hell of winning. I guess that's kind of where I'm getting at for it, is not so much personal that, you know, suddenly I don't think he's going to win. Never thought he was going to win, but I don't think you want to telegraph it here. Yeah, and I didn't even think about the fact that you're right. They pretty much have played the same spot a month ago on Raw. I guess that was the go home before he got hurt. He ended up with a concussion and couldn't do the title match. So, well, screw it. It worked last time. We'll do it here. I just really think they would have been better off leaving Del Rio out here and just letting both guys look good like they did in their respective matches. And, I mean, Del Rio got a 10-minute match out of Sin Cara. Sheamus, a 15-minute match with Jericho. Both guys get big, you know, win strong. And I think that would have been the better move going in, simply because so many people didn't expect Del Rio to win by putting him out here now and letting him get this big moment. It just screams that it wasn't going to happen. But that's the route they chose to go, and that was the end of SmackDown. I was so happy to get there. It was a rough show, to say the least. Not a great way to promote Money in the Bank. Jake, before we get out of here, anything you want to add?
No, I think we covered it, man. It was definitely a down issue or episode of SmackDown. Hopefully we'll get back to business next week.
I am 100% in agreement with you, and hopefully being away from Raw again next week will do something good for SmackDown. You and I will be back next week with another SmackDown audio review. Of course, in between Money in the Bank Sunday night, Jason Powell and I will be providing live coverage for the show, and then he and I will be getting together for another one of these audio reviews afterwards. But that one will be for our members exclusively, so if you want to get in on that audio, plus the other 6-7 hours of audio we do each week, and access to the .NET member forum, the .NET member blog site, and, you know, might be the arguably the best part, the ad-free version of the site, all you got to do, head over to ProWrestling.net, click on the right-hand side of the page where it says .NET member sign up, and we will get you going $7.50, $5.50 a month, depending on which option you take. It's a good time to sign up. Thank you for our members who are listening, and even those who aren't members, thank you for reading ProWrestling.net every day, making us your stop for wrestling news. For Jake Barnett, this is Chris Shore. Thank you guys again for your support. We will see you back next week. Join us Sunday night for Money in the Bank right here on ProWrestling.net. Everyone, have a great weekend, and take care.